Coming up next is the final part three of our Monty Roberts interview series. Recently, the revered horseman was attending the English Melbourne Premier Yearling Sales, and I had the privilege of sitting down with him for a couple of hours to shoot the breeze. In this final part of our interview with Monty, he talks about many things, including the challenges of Chautauqua. He also says, remarkably for a man well into his 80s, that he's still got a lot to learn about horses, as have we all.
How do you regard Australian horsemen at the moment, generally?
I regard all horsemen on the face of this earth to be scratching the surface of what we need to learn, including me. I make mistakes every day. I saw a mistake today that I made. My boots are muddy right now. And I was working with all the babies I advised on at Inglis. And I saw some mistakes that I made in my scoring. We make mistakes. It's learning from those mistakes that we have to do. And so I regard all horsemen on the face of the earth as scratching the surface. To me, our greatest trainers ever, oh, he was monumental, as being a neophyte in what we need to know to really be the best we can be for the horses. And that doesn't put me in, I'm not bragging about me that I know more than anybody else. I have some idols in the horse industry. Charlie Whittingham was one of my idols. And I got Tobin Bronze for him here. Farrell W. Jones was one of my idols. And I had dozens of champions with him. And my wife and I led the world for 18 years in the production of two-year-olds in breeze-up sales to go into racing. We led the world. And I had alleged Horse of the World twice, won the Arc de Triomphe when it was the best race on earth, twice. And I'm scratching the surface. So don't count me as any smarter than the next guy. It's just that I want to learn more. And maybe the next guy who's considered an idol now needs to learn more too. I think we all do.
You mentioned the Yearling Sales, and you've been here in Melbourne for the English Sales this week looking at yearlings and buying them on behalf of a client. How was that experience?
It was fun. It was an incredible experience. You wouldn't think that some guy, 84 years old, that has done everything you would think about in the horse industry, 52 disciplines I've operated in at world-class level, 52 different disciplines. How could he get excited about going to another sale? I tell you, I was on cloud nine. I was in absolute joyous condition out there the whole time, seeing good horses, some bad horsemanship, but kids coming to me saying, show me how to do better, show me how to get this horse to have a better overstride, and looking at me as though I had information for them. That is such a good feeling, and I don't mean it that I know that more than anybody else. But by golly, I've been in this thing a long time. And if I haven't accumulated a fair bit of information by now, something is very wrong. But there's some hungry kids out there. And the next generation will get a lot better than the generation before. It really will. We're moving away from the old traditional horsemanship very rapidly.
What were your impressions of the horse flesh that you saw and purchased?
The impressions I have of the horse flesh that I saw, and then some that I purchased too, was that it's unique for me to see these horses in Australia with the big bottoms. As Dwayne Lucas says in America, I want my horses, particularly my fillies, to have a face like Marilyn Monroe and a backside like a washerwoman. Big backsides they have, and they can really go up the racetrack. I see more overstride on the horses today than I've ever seen, because I think early on the UK bloodstock agents really introduced that overstride walking to the world of horsemanship. And it didn't take long for people to pick up on it and realize that those horses take fewer steps in a mile than the average horse, the horse without a big overstride. So if you take fewer steps, you get less exhausted and you win more races. And the ones that have the feet going north and south instead of east and west are better. I mean, across the body axis or in line with the body axis. The riding of the horses in the races is going to change dramatically in Australia in the next few years, in my opinion. At 84, what am I going to say about that? How much am I going to change? I'm going to change as much as I can, because the riding is way, way behind what the best riders in the world are doing. And it's not just simply somebody's opinion. You can prove the anatomical challenges that riders are giving horses. You can prove it. It is scientifically provable that doing some of the things that the riders do here is costing horses distance or time or links. For instance, horses, well, you can just go there with that, because they ride differently in Australia. Anytime you see a rider come to Santa Anita in California and ride, he looks very different from the rest of the riders. And if you see a rider go to England and ride from Australia, they look so much different from the rest of the riders, or Germany or anywhere. And so if they look that much different, then why aren't the other ones getting closer to what they look like if it's the best thing? Well, it's not the best thing.
Mm. In a nutshell, what are they doing wrong, Jim?
Well, yeah, I'd rather not go into that because I don't want to seem like... I rode my first race in 1946, and I was a jockey. Second World War time, when the jockeys were off at war. So I've been there in the jockey saddle. I rode from the first starting stall used in California that had its springs on it, where all the gates opened at the same time. The ones before that had a thing, they pulled the gate, I think it went up or something. The starting stalls themselves, the barriers, are dead wrong. They're dead wrong. But they've invested so much in supplying all the barriers for all the tracks that they just laugh at you when you say you ought to change this, because they'd have to change them all, you know? But they're wrong. And I can prove they're wrong. And that's part of Chautauqua's problem, is the way the stalls are made.
It's a pretty traumatic experience for a horse in the barriers, isn't it?
Sure it is. Horses were created by God to be on a grassy plain somewhere where they could see about a mile in each direction and have grass in front of them, and to flee anything that seemed unsafe. They were not horses that would go into a tight place. They're claustrophobic to the 10th power. All horses are. And part of my work today was to cause horses not to lean into the rails in the barrier. But they do, because they want out of that place. And there's a lot of reasons why they don't go out of the barrier when the gates come open. And there's reasons why they lean over in there and their feet are in the stall next to them rather than in theirs. There's reasons why they try to kick the back out of the barriers. And we human beings tend to close our eyes to these reasons. I don't. I keep an open mind, and I keep my eyes open, and I study, why is this horse doing that? But you're right, it is a traumatic experience for them to go in there. Doesn't have to be quite as traumatic as it is, but we tend to add to that trauma. Oh, when the gates fly open, just give him a good crack across the hind legs. Oh, good. And so the next time he goes in there, he's rolling his eyes straight back to see where the whack is coming from. Not a good idea. Didn't work. Mm. That's my life.
Winks, the champion mayor, not just of Australia, but the world now. How much have you enjoyed seeing her race?
Oh. Well, when we watched Black Caviar, you know, everybody said you'll never see another one like that again. And I tended to believe them. I was there in England when she raced there, and Black Caviar was the greatest of her time, and maybe better than Secretariat. I don't know. Secretariat's our famous one. And along comes Winks, and eclipses, in one generation, eclipses Black Caviar. Get out of here. That can't happen. And I watched on racing.com, and I watched this morning this fellow winning some huge race here. It wasn't the Melbourne Cup. It was something else, I think. But he said, oh, there isn't a child in this audience that will ever see this happen again.
That was Lee Friedman when Mackayvee Diva won her third Melbourne
Cup. That's the one. Was it Melbourne Cup?
Mm.
What a mare. And there will never be a child in this audience see this again. And look what's happened in my lifetime, not just that child's lifetime. And who knows, maybe there's another one coming. Yeah, one thing about it is that Australia is a tough place. People are tough. They came here digging ditches and farming, and they're tough people. People of the soil, they're tough people. And horses that come here are living with tough people and living a tough life in some cases. And the ones that come through that are the toughest. And maybe, you know, it's the kids from the other side of the tracks that win in the boxing match and the wrestling match and the this and the, that. The what is that game they play? Not soccer, but...
A football, AFL?
No, but yeah. I'm thinking of the one that Wales is so good in, where they have the ball that's...
Aussie rules.
Not Aussie rules.
No, Gaelic football.
What?
Gaelic football?
No.
Rugby.
Rugby. They bash one another down. That's Aussie stuff, you know? And there's no violence in that because there's a different color jersey on either one of them. And the rules are there. And it's okay to bash him down. So it's not violent. But it turns out to be sometimes injurious, if not violent. But Aussie people and Aussie horses are tough. And I think that's where the major champions come from, because this one made it through that tough world out there. And me, I'm for trying to make the trip a little easier for everybody, so that you get there and let talent take over rather than just being the survivor, you know.
We tend to try very hard to define and analyze what makes horses like Black Caviar and Winks as great as they are. Scientific testing, measurement of stride, heart rate, all of those things. But beyond that, what's the Monty Roberts perspective on what makes a horse like Winks amazing?
When I came here, Daryl's Joy was a big horse in those early days, and I bought him. And the vet turned him down, wouldn't ship him to California because they said his QRS complex was not good enough. He had a weakness in his heart. And my buyer in California, the man putting up the money, said, well, I'm not taking him anyway. And he followed us right over there, and he won $1.5 million or something in California. Made a fool of me, that's for sure. And we don't have the answer yet. And maybe there is an X factor here that none of us are ever going to see. I'm not going to see it, because at 84, I'm not going to see much more. But isn't it a joy when there are people out there still looking and trying to make life better for these animals? I just love it. And I don't know whether we'll ever analyze all of what God does, or creator, or whatever you want to call it. Maybe it's a cloud of gases that run this whole thing. I don't know. But the creation of a species is a very interesting thing.
Chautauqua is a horse that has caused all sorts of problems here in Australia for himself, his owners, and ultimately his career has been put on ice permanently because of his unwillingness to leave the barriers and race with the field. I know that there were attempts to get you here to Australia to work with the horse. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. What is your view on Chautauqua, if you don't mind me asking, having observed his behaviour and been close enough to those connected with him to understand what the depth of the issues are?
Well, it's interesting that you started this question with a sentence. I know Chautauqua has caused a lot of problems for his owners and people in racing and stuff. Chautauqua did not cause those problems. It's the people that caused the problems. Chautauqua is a horse. He doesn't want problems. He's a domestic horse. If Chautauqua had no mistakes made by human beings, there never would be the resistance to go out through that daylight that was opening up to him. None whatsoever. Oh, he just doesn't want to race anymore. What? When they pull him out of the stall, 30 lengths behind the field, he goes and wins the test. Don't tell me he doesn't want to race anymore. I mean, that is, anybody could see that. He loves to race. He doesn't want what happened. And I've seen enough videos that I have an opinion of what happened, but I don't want to voice my opinion on anybody. I think hundreds of mistakes were made. Chautauqua didn't make this decision after all that, those years of racing, without it being a human-caused problem. Believe me. And I saw a lot of the human-caused problems on videos that they provided me in California when they were asking me to come. I would have loved to had an opportunity not to put anybody else down and not to even say that they made mistakes. Because the first thing I would say is I make a lot of mistakes every day. The difference might be that I keep my eyes open and try to learn from those mistakes. There are people who say, I didn't make any mistakes, it's him. And they blame the horse. To blame a horse for anything is like blaming the night for being dark. It's a natural thing. Horses can't make it up. The night gets dark. One time when I came to Australia and went did on a tour right across Australia, a guy that studies the stars, what do you call those people?
Astrologer?
He was an astrologist. He's still an astrologist in America. Wanted to come down here with me and go on the, his wife was a fan of mine with the horses. But he studied astrology. He studied, and I want to see them from the southern hemisphere. And he went right across this country with me. And I called him the day I remember hearing for the first time to blame a horse for anything is like blaming the night for being dark. And I called him and I said, what would happen if we had 24-hour daylight? And he said, oh, my word, that would be the worst thing in the world. Why do you say that? Well, he said, first of all, it would take two suns, one on one side of the earth and one on the other. And he said, there's planets where they have 24 hours a day of daylight. No life there, because you would boil if it didn't cool off at night. The fact that the sun goes away for half the time is the only reason we could exist on this earth. And I thought, how prophetic is that? Mm-hmm. The night being dark is a natural plus factor in our lives. And to blame a horse for anything, they cannot plan to go against us. They cannot decide they don't want to do something, so they just, you know, dictate to us. They can't do it. It's us that make the mistake. And we have to stop blaming the horse for anything. Oh, he kicked the farrier. All right. He did? Yeah. What did the farrier do then? Well, he gave him a good one with a rasp up the belly.
Oh.
He might kick the next farrier too, you know. And things like that. Typically, people who are in the horse industry will tend to blame the horse rather than blame the human elements in the horse's life. And that's a big mistake. Mm.
That's Monty Roberts there. Wonderful to catch up with the legendary horseman whilst he was visiting Melbourne recently. And if you'd like to hear the full interview with Monty, you can go to the RSN website where it will be held. And there's also some questions I posed to him during the interview that you haven't heard on this show. So if you want to catch up with everything Monty had to say, why not go to the website?